Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the tire.
Hello, Inspired Rebels, and welcome. I'm Victoria Hasser, your host of Inspired Rebel Radio, a podcast where you're inspired to step outside the box, embrace your fears, live your life as if the gate is left wide open. I'm so excited to have a special guest today with us, a Inspired Rebel herself, Melissa Binkley. Melissa is the CEO and founder of NFB Coaching and Pure Body Love Events, also the creator and founder of the Society Intuitive Intelligence Academy, certified master transformation specialist, soul mentor, best-selling author, and holistic health coach, and a dynamic, inspirational, and intuitive speaker. She empowers healers, creatives, entrepreneurs, and women to tap into their intuitive intelligence, break through their perfectionistic paralysis so they share their purpose and gifts on platforms throughout the world. Welcome, Melissa. Are you there?
I'm here. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be sharing with you today.
Hey, girl. Yeah, we're so excited to have you on the show today and taking the time to be with us with your full and super exciting schedule. Our topic of the day is how do we find gratitude in the aftermath of trauma. But before we dive right in, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about you and what makes you such a sacred rebel?
Wow. Well, a little bit about myself. I've been on this journey into working for myself and entrepreneurs and healing my life for many, many years now. And I think like many people out there, we get to a point where we know that there's something greater in our lives. And as we figure out how to heal our own crap, we can't really get through that. So I have a very full and interesting 20s in my life, and it was very rebellious in many different ways. And I through that rebellion really came into learning how to deal and heal with myself, and have come to a place of really being sacred in my life too, this place of deep connection with the world and with the earth and with other people in humanity. And I think that the combination of, you know, I have red hair and tattoos and, you know, stand on stage and I don't mind cussing on stage and I'll just say whatever the heck I want. Except for when I'm on the radio and they don't allow it, you know. But in the space of really saying that I'm not afraid to live into who I am and just be bold about my truths and my beliefs and everything that makes me stand out. I've had people walk out of my events because I have made a comment that they didn't really like, but those that have stayed have completely transformed their lives. And so I think that there's this space where when you come out as authentic as you are, even if that is being a little bit of a rebel, it really brings a sacred community together, because people then allow themselves to be free to express themselves in the way that they want. And so many times we're trying to teach kids these days to like be in a box, right? And so we need to be open. And so that's one of the things that drew me so much to you and the Sacred Rebel, is this idea of you can be and live what you want, and it be a rebel and still live into the truth of humanity and connectedness.
That's right. Right on, sister. That is so cool. So do you think you're born a sacred rebel? Is it our experience? Is it the shit that we have to go through that, you know, it's kind of like make it or break it, baby. Like you break down and then we break through, right? We got to break down before we break through. So what was it that really allowed for you to come to that space? You know, you've got, you know, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your story and your, you know, coming through, right? You had some major, some challenges, right? When you were growing up and you know, eating disorders, drugs, the loss of your mom at a really young age, right? So that's super hard. So if you want to just share a little bit about that in your journey.
Yeah, sure. And so to answer the question that you're talking about, do you know, are we born a sacred rebel? I think we're all born sacred. obviously born into that spirituality. And I think that the rebel comes out when we finally defy the fact that we can't live a certain way anymore, and that the only way to live is into our truth. And so that, so we have this place of actually the, at least for me and a lot of people that I know, the rebel part is actually bringing us back to that sacredness that we were born with. So, and you almost need to be a rebel to be able to create that sacredness in your life again, because so many people, we've been told in so many ways that we can't have it, or we can't be that way, or we can't do it.
Right.
And, we're talking about the idea that gratitude through trauma in my own story. I spent many years, my mother left when I was 9 years old. And at the time when that happened, it really upheaved my whole life. We moved, and we went from Texas up to Ohio, and I was living with my grandparents, and my father decided to take myself and my one sister down to Florida with him for a summer. And at that time, when he disappeared for like 3 weeks and left us, me and my sister, I was 10, and my sister was 4 at the time, and just left us like by ourselves in a place, and in the care of the people that live next door. And so this man that lived next door with his wife and their little baby, I'd go over there and get food and all this kind of stuff, and we had no furniture in our place, and I was molested by this guy. So that was my first, at that point I was already very suicidal for my mother leaving. I was already in a really bad space. I was considered, everybody was like, you're just like your mother. So, at the age of 10, I was already in a really bad spot. So I spent the next couple of years really messed up. It messed up, but I had this huge, what I call perfectionist paralysis. Nobody at school knew. I was a straight A student. I was the top of my class. I was like this person that appeared perfect, but on the inside, I was like trying to eat to commit suicide, pills and things like that, all sorts of stuff at such a young age. And finally, I just dove into school and sports really, really hardcore and kind of pulled myself out of the depression and went into my senior year. And then in my senior year, I was raped. I was locked into a garage and raped by an older man, and that completely changed my life. It, like, really... really created a major rift in my life. And I always talk about the rape is not as bad as the second rape, because the second rape came when my people at school started finding out about what was happening. My grandparents, who I lived with at the time, said that it was my fault. All of these things that happen that come along with being the victim and being victimized again. Just like right now, if you've read this story about the Stanford rape victim her stories and things, it's true. And I mean, and I'm so sad because this was 21 years ago, and in 21 years, nothing freaking changed when it comes to the brutalization of women in this world and how they're treated. And so that made me, that right there, it made me a rebel. It literally made me say, F the world. Yeah. Screw all of you. I'm going to do things my own way, and I'm not going to listen to any of it. But I was so traumatized by that I spent the next few years, they'd find me in closets biting my arms up and down. I didn't go back to school. Like, I still graduated top of my class from high school because I was already so ahead. I ended up salutatorian. I got straight A's and everything. So I still graduated, but I never went back to school the rest of my senior year after that happened. I went on to college, didn't go to the college I wanted to because I was I was scared shitless, and so I went to Ohio State instead of leaving the state. So it really affected my life in a lot of really major ways, and I spent many years traumatized by that, drugs, got into all sorts of crazy stuff, and didn't love myself at all. Had a beautiful daughter, and I have eating disorders, I mean, all sorts of stuff, and she was the main reason that I actually even survived, because I was so self-destructive that if it hadn't been for her, I was living for her and not for myself. And then finally, in my late 20s, I started to wake up. Like 28 was when I started to wake up to my own spirituality and get back into my sacredness. And that was when I was able to use the processes of learning, from the trauma, from the drugs, from everything that I had gone through, and to use that as a powerful force to change my life and now change other people's lives. And so I see I would never change it. I would never change the fact that because people talk about, the drugs or the things that I did or the things that happened, the sexual promiscuity. I mean, there's all sorts of crazy stuff that happened because I wouldn't change any of that. for anything, because it really made me be able to be empathetic in my business today. It allows me to tap into spirit. It allows me to have the intuition and the psychic abilities that I do. It's allowed me all of these things and to be able to be connected into the universe on a deeper, even soul level. And also to allow me to get to a place where I want to leave a legacy behind, where I want to do something so great for the world to make a difference and make a change, because 1 in 3 women are violated and experience violence in this world. 1 in 3. That's a lot of freaking people. And if we don't change that, it's not going to make a difference. You know, we're going to be really stuck. And I say that about women because we all talk about, you know, gay, black, this and that, all of the different ways that people have been oppressed over time, but of more than any of them, women of all genders, race, color, sexuality have been oppressed more than anybody else. And that's huge, and I want to make a huge difference about that in the future. And so this trauma that I experienced, I'm really grateful for it, actually. And there's much more to the healing that's gone along with that. But that's why I have a business that I have today. It's what started it. It's what catapulted me into sharing my story, and it's what helped me to transform my own life so that I could transform other people's lives.
Yeah, wow, yeah, for sure, right? I think I find that in this realm of sacred rebels and in the world of the healer, and we teach what we need to learn, right? And the trauma that we've experienced and, you know, dysfunctional family, blah, 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 like you and I are somewhat of a similar upbringing, and it definitely made me that tough chick, you know, from Brockton, but at the same time, you know, able to live in an ashram for 6 years, right? So it's like that perfect mesh that we can show people that it's okay as a woman to speak up, right? Say what you mean what you say, and not feel like you're being bossy, right? Or even aggressive. It's just being, right? It's just being and being in the truth, like you said. So, you know, you spoke a little bit about this thing about the victim, the victimhood, you know, and I see this so much as a coach myself, that people want to blame everybody else around them for their own, you know, lack of, you know, health or happiness, right? Prosperity, good fortune, all of those things, right? Where they're putting their happiness in everyone else's hands. So I guess what I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that. First of all, for our listeners, you know, what are some of the signs that you're playing the role of the victim? Because clearly they don't even realize they're doing it, right?
Yeah.
What are some of the signs, you know, to see in ourselves that, that's victim mentality, you know?
Yeah. So I'll explain in my life how I realized how I was playing the victim and how I was letting things show up for me. I was angry at everybody. I was angry at my father. I was angry at, you know, the other people in my life because they had it out for me. There was always something that was going on that it was somebody else's fault. So one of the ways that that showed up in my life was this thing that happened to me back when I was 10 years old. In my mind, you know, even though, yes, my father left for 3 weeks and there was a lot of really other traumatic things that happened at that time, one of the things that I always was so angry about was that he allowed, you know, he allowed this to happen. He just left me to fend for myself at the age of 10 years old. So I didn't tell him about that ever until about 2 years ago. So when I was 36 years old, 2 years ago, I finally decided to tell my father what happened to me when I was 10 years old. And he broke down. Yeah. He broke down and he started crying, and he said, Melissa, he said, I didn't leave you. He's like, I left you in the care of those people. He said, I didn't just up and leave you. And so in my mind, I had thought all this time, he left me, he didn't love me, he didn't care. And in reality, he didn't know that these people were going to do that to me, but he had left me literally in their care, and they just didn't take care of us. They made us stay over in this apartment, the roach infested apartment with no furniture and whatever, and he molested me and, you know, all this stuff. But my father didn't know that that was what happened, and he thought he was leaving me in the care of these people, and that was everything going to be okay. So it took me 26 years to finally tell him, and that allowed me to step out of my victimhood in a lot of ways and allowed me to heal a lot of the pieces of my relationship with him, although there was abuse and other things that happened, that piece of it, because I finally realized at that moment, he was younger than I was at the time, you know, young, he was under 36, I was 36 when I told him, younger than I was at that time when I finally told him, and he was just doing the best he could with what he had. My mom was gone, he had three daughters, he didn't know what the fuck was going on in his life, excuse me, you know, and he was just doing the best that he could. So when I was able to step out of the victim role, because if you're a victim, you're also, what else, the other side is you have to be a prosecutor. You're persecuting somebody in your life if you're standing in the victim role, because it's always somebody else's fault, right? So I was able to step out of the role of being a victim, step out of the persecuting position of being like, you know, this is my life is shit because of you, or my life is a problem because of you, or, you know, and take responsibility for where I was at in my life. And also, once you step out of the victim role, not only do you get to take responsibility for the bad things, but you also get to take responsibility for the good things that happen to you in your life. By being able to step out of victim, I'm able to take responsibility for all the wonderful things that I've done, like raising an amazing, amazing daughter, having an amazing business, you know, helping the people that I help. Whereas when I'm in the victim role, or when you're in the victim role, you can't take responsibility for any of it. So the good things that happen to you are not yours as well as the bad things that happen. None of it is.
That's right.
And so now, instead of being a victim, I look at it as a thriver and survivor. And, you know, when you can step into that place of looking at those things. So the signs that you're being a victim is somebody else's fault. You don't know how to take responsibility for your own action in it. You're not willing to stand back and see what's mirroring in your life. Everything in your life is a mirrored reflection of what your belief system is that you're putting off. So if you have all negative people in your life, and everybody in your life is negative, like I used to have somebody around me that everybody in her life was negative. Well, who was the one common denominator? Her.
So, you know, I know, my favorite question. That's
so
my
if everybody in your life is negative, then look at your own life and see where you're being negative and change that. And all of a sudden, everybody in your life is going to change. And, you know, so everybody's always saying this about me or always doing that. And I'm like, well, that's your perception because you're putting that off and that's what you're going to get back. And so when you can really change those things, so anytime you use phrases like everything or everybody or this always happens to me, really look, because those are all keys that you're being a victim.
Wow, that was really, that was some really good information. So here, Brené Brown, the author of Daring Greatly and, you know, the really famous TEDx speaker who speaks on vulnerability as well as transformation. I love that woman. Vulnerability, like I guess it's funny, and you may be able to relate to this. When I was going through my yoga teacher training, and that's kind of when a lot of the exterior wall started to come down, and people would say, like, I might actually shed some tears, you know, during some kind of a group session, and then people say, wow, it's really nice to see a more vulnerable side of you. And so the word vulnerable to me was like a death sentence. It was like, you couldn't call me anything worse than that, right? Mm. And so I get it, right? So clearly you're no stranger to vulnerability, right, Melissa? So if you could speak to that a little bit, because again, even still, you know, as I'm bringing this work into the corporate world, right? And you know, working with executives, and it's like, you know, I'm trying to find this side door into this place of vulnerability, because clearly you just can't use the word. Because people are so turned off by it, because it taps into our emotions, right? So if you could tap into a little bit about that and how being vulnerable actually can make us better entrepreneurs, better healers, and just, you know, better individuals on the planet.
Yeah. You know, I ran from vulnerability for a really long time, just like you, Victoria. It was something that I was really scared of. And especially, you know, in the space of being vulnerable and this vulnerability, especially when I left Ohio 12 years ago to move to Florida, one of the reasons that I left was because I had been, and this is me being vulnerable, because I don't talk about this very much, I'd been a drug dealer, and I was getting out because and I needed to get away so that I could make sure that my daughter was okay and so that I could save her life and save my own. And so not only had I gotten into drugs, but I had been dealing and doing a lot of stuff, and I had a lot of friends go to the federal pen, and I was never willing to talk about any of this stuff. So I spent the first many years that I was in Florida, I'm a crab, I'm a cancer. I literally went back into my crab shell, and I was like, screw the world. My trust had been broken. Some really bad things happened to my friends, and also they did some really messed up things to me when I left, and So I literally stopped trusting everybody. When I started doing on the speaking circuit back in 2014 and doing large events and large conferences, it was the first time I finally started to open up again about my life. And I first started sharing about the rape and the molestation and the abuse from my father and some of those things. And as I became more vulnerable and started sharing these things, what I realized was it was transforming people's lives. People would come up to me afterwards and be like, I know these things. This is how my life is. Can you help me through this? By me being vulnerable and opening myself back up and coming out of my crab shell and allowing my truth to be shown, I was able to actually help other people. And it was cathartic and healing for me. The more that I shared, the more I was able to work through it. So in 2014, I finally, the first thing that I shared on stage, so I had healed, the trauma, I had healed the things from the rape, but one thing that I really had never healed was I had this bad mother syndrome. I had a real feeling that I was a bad mother. I didn't really ever talk about it, but I thought I was the worst mother in the world because I had been the sealer, I had done these things, and I had left Ohio to go to Florida. And so I got on stage in 2014. My daughter at the time was 15, and she was there. She was working. She was helping me out. She's been working for me for several years, and she's amazing. And I got on stage, and I started talking about, first time ever, talking about being a bad mother and about the bad mother syndrome. Now, let me tell you, this was the most transformative thing that could have ever happened to me because I didn't expect to happen what happened next. My amazing daughter, who's an introvert, like who kind of doesn't want to be shown in public and doesn't, get out there that much, and, amazing, gets on stage and tells everybody that I'm the best mother ever. How could that, right? But if I had never spoken that out, that would have never happened. That was one of the most healing experiences of my life, and it took a lot of vulnerability. I cried when I was on that stage when I talked about it, but I was willing to be vulnerable, and it was healing. So then what I did next year in 2015, I had gone and started working with teenagers in drug detention centers and telling them that they were enough and that doing drugs and being a part of that did not define their lives, and telling them my story about my drugs and where I was at now. And so finally in 2015 at my second annual conference, so the year before I had talked about being a mother, bad mother and being vulnerable. This year I actually came out and the first time ever in public that I had talked about my drugs and the drug dealing. And you know what? I had three or four people that came up to me and said, thank you so much because this changed my life because I felt bad or guilty or, for things that I have done around that situation in their lives. And so the vulnerability that I was willing to show, again, was allowed to heal somebody. And then this year I've gone through this huge breakup and this relationship and all these things, and I've been very open and honest and vulnerable in my communication around what's happening and with the new people that I'm meeting, and it's changed everything for me. So it still feels kind of scary at times, and I still, want to go run and hide in my crab shell, but I honestly can't go back. I can't go back to living any other way because I'm having more love and more belonging and more joy in my life because of these experiences than I would have ever had before. And, Brene Brown, one of her quotes that she says I love, she says, owning our story can be hard, but not nearly as difficult as spending our lives running from it. She says, embracing our vulnerabilities is risky, but not nearly as dangerous as giving up on love and belonging and joy, the experiences that that make us the most vulnerable. Only when we are brave enough to explore the darkness will we discover the infinite power of our light. How can you not love that?
I really love that woman. She's freaking awesome. And she's a scientist, right? So she came from that research background, and it's awesome. Like, who would have ever thought, 10 years ago that, we'd be freaking out, in a really good way over, this topic of vulnerability, right? That's awesome. And thank you so much for being so vulnerable with us, Melissa. right? We're going to get to love that word for sure. So another area, so I've worked with thousands of female, entrepreneurs, and I have to say that one of the biggest blocks that I do see with them is the perfectionism syndrome. Before I go into this question, I actually want to give the phone number out to everyone who's listening if they want to call in and ask you any questions, anything, any comments they might want to share. The guest call-in number is 646-716-7900. 7979. Awesome. So literally just the other night, one of my clients were talking about that perfectionism syndrome, as I call it. And the funny thing about it is, it's really, perfectionism is truly an illusion, right? To start with, anyways.
Yeah.
Because my idea of perfect is going to be way different from your idea of what's perfect in a man. Let's say, for example, a man, right? Like, whoa, am I perfect man? Whatever. So it's like this thing that we hold on to is clearly made up by our imbalanced ego, right? That is like just create. For me, it's about like, it's just this permanent obstacle that sits there that says, well, if I can't be perfect, then I'm just not going to do anything, right? So anyways, I'd love for you to speak a little bit to that around your experience and how you work with women to get past that, to just do it anyways, you know, even if it's messy, right? Just do it anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's really important. I was a perfectionist. I had that in because I didn't want anybody to know. So I was a perfectionist from the youngest time that I can remember, from the time, I mean, like 9 or 10 years old all the way up. I got straight A's. I was, the perfect student. Nobody knew what was going on behind me because as long as I appeared perfect to the world, I wouldn't be rejected. I would be loved. So in my mind, being perfect equated to being loved, to being wanted, to being, not being rejected. And I had felt like I had this idea that my mom had left and that, you know, the abuse from my father, all of that stuff was because I was a bad person or that there was something wrong with me. And so if I pretended to be perfect, then everything would be okay. So I literally spent years all the way up through my college, years out of college. I graduated top of my class. I was, everything. I had all these things, and nobody knew what was going on behind doors. Nobody knew all the shit that was happening in my life, the way I was treating myself, what I was doing to my body. And even after college, when I got into competing, I was a fitness and figure competitor. Again, I got to a place where I was in the health and fitness world, and I appeared perfect out on the outside. My body looked perfect. I would be on stage, I'd be in magazines, all this stuff. But on the inside, I was literally dying. I was starving myself. I wasn't eating. I was doing all of these things, wearing this thing called a Scream for 2 years straight that destroyed my colon, like all these things. So again, that perfectionist paralysis, as I call it, where I wanted everybody to think that my life was perfect. And if they did, then they would love me. And what I realized was that I always felt empty. I always felt like nobody loved me. I always felt like there was something wrong. And when I finally dropped going back to vulnerability, when I finally dropped the perfectionist attitude and just became who I was authentically, I found that I all of a sudden I received more love. I felt more connected to the community. I felt more connected to everybody than I ever had when I was being perfect. Like when I finally just said screw it to the world and said, I don't care if you like me or not, I like myself. I don't need any more friends, I have enough. I don't care if you want me to, you want to walk out of my events and walk out because you know what? I know that this is the way that I need to be and this is what I need to do. And by doing that, I built a deeper community, a stronger community. I have more people following me. I have better relationships. And I've realized that it doesn't matter. So you know what? I sometimes send out an email. And it won't be perfect. It may have, at least when I used to do them, I don't do most of my emails anymore, but I would send out something and I'd get like a response. Oh, there was a misspelling. I'd be like, I don't care. So what if there's a misspelling? Who cares? You got the point, right? That's all that matters.
Right.
So I'll post something on Facebook quickly and it won't be the perfect format. And I'm an English major, so it's not the perfect grammar. Do you think I care? I don't give crap.
Right.
Because why?
Yeah.
Because I don't need to be perfect anymore because in this world, there's nothing out there that says, we're going to come together when we allow each other to be imperfectly perfect, imperfectly.
Yeah.
And we all have to be that way. So it's a real struggle, though, and I see it. I had clients that literally wouldn't even send out an email because they were so afraid that they would do it wrong that they were afraid to send it out. I'm like, well, you're not getting any clients because you're not connecting with your community and you're not sending out an email. So at some point, it's got to be a give or take, and work around the mindset. And that's all.
Right.
It's a social pattern. It's a subconscious pattern that we created somewhere in our lives because the subconscious mind says better to not die than to take a new risk, right? So you got to work on stretching your risk zone and stepping out of that and then being able to really make that difference.
Yeah, it's like that, you know, the joke that says I've never made a mistake, but I've never tried anything either, right? It's like, really?
Right.
You know, yeah. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So I've definitely worked with that, and I think I've kind of gotten through it, but so many people just stay stuck, you know, in that space. And so, yeah, it can be really helpful to, I think
so many people are afraid of failure that they won't even try, you know?
Right.
I mean,
afraid of failure. And then as we know, the primary job of the ego is to look good and be right. Right. So, if you're in that space of that false self voice and you're not more into that, that's why, as you say, stepping into your authenticity of being who we really are, you know, for me to be, you know, to share with the world and say, you know what, I like, you know, my favorite TV show is Entourage or whatever, you know, and to say that people go, well, really, you watch TV, you know, like people, you know, can put you on the pedestal, right? You know, I lived in an ashram for 6 years and, so it's sort of those things to let people know, like you were saying before about sharing and being vulnerable earlier, it's like letting people know you're actually real and you're accessible, right? And you're relatable. Because same thing, you know, you and I are so similar. Like, you know, I had the fitness background, that, you know, the 0% body fat, you know, always eat, like I bump into clients in Whole Foods and they wouldn't want to show me their cart. They'd be afraid, you know, that, oh, there's a Snickers bar in there, whatever. And I'm like, I don't care what you eat. Like, does it make you happy? You know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. And so, oh wow, yeah, some really stuff. So we're pretty much at the halfway mark again. We'd love to hear from any of our listeners. If you want to call in and speak to Melissa, 646-716-7979. We'd love to hear from you. And you're listening to Inspire Rebel Radio with Victoria Hacker and our guest today, Melissa Binkley. So a couple of other things. I know that magic, I love that was on there. Sort of how to believe in magic. Magic, you know, for me, it's one of my favorite words, I have to be honest. And so how, you know, I always call them the layman people that are just sort of like, you know, well, I need to see it to believe it. I need, where's the research? Where's the science? You know, I need, what is this? How can magic show up in our life, and how can we just be open to it, and how has magic kind of changed your life?
Yeah, so, you know, one of my big things when I talk about believing in magic or things coming about as a miracle, it's just think of it like this. Imagine the wonderment of a child and how they experience the world, right?
Mm.
Well, you know, we are then taught to ignore this wonder and focus on reality. And so magic is about bringing forth faith and belief and wonderment back into your life. It's really about creating your world the way you want to have it. Magic will allow you to even find your tribe. It'll allow you to live your purpose. And it's really about releasing the limiting beliefs and healing your mindset. And for me, magic is this space that we can step into. That it's the space in between, the space of understanding that there's something more than what we have right now. Think of like a trapeze, right? And you're on the trapeze and you're on one side and you're reaching and you're letting go for a moment to grasp to the other side. And in that space in between, when everything is a possibility, where everything is, where there is nothing, where you have every choice in the world, that's magic. You have the ability now to create your life. You have the ability to make anything happen that you want if you allow it. And so many times we get stuck in a space of it has to be this way or something is is a certain way or not. And when you can realize that it's not, then you can really step into the full magic of everything that exists. It's something that we allow. That's why for me, like I do full moon rituals. You know, the equinox, everything that has to do with this space of belief and magic and miracles and everything that we are. Really talks about that. And one of my favorite people that I follow, especially with what I'm creating with the Intuitive Intelligence Academy, is all about this. And Greg Braden, he talks about the power of the in-between and this magic in his book. It's called The Secret of the Lost Mode of Power, The Hidden Power of Beauty, Blessings, Wisdom, and Hurt. And he talks about that there's a power that lives in the space between there, which is that subtle instant when something ends and what follows next has yet begun. He says, from the birth and death of galaxies to the beginning and ending of careers and relationships and even the simplicity of breathing in and out, creation is a story of beginnings and endings, cycles that start and stop, expand, contract, live and die. And that's what magic is. It's this this place, instant, where all possibilities exist. Nothing has been chosen. And all events originate from this powerful, magical moment. And it's really this mystery and this possibility that connects these two spaces and honors the wisdom of traditions of our past and really allows us to step into magical realms. You know, I'm a believer in unicorns and rainbows and alternative, you know, dimensions and universes and all of that kind of, people say that woo-woo stuff, but there's such a scientific backing to say that, look, science backs magic. Science backs the belief that there's something else greater out there that we're all connected to. And when we can use our thoughts and use our minds to connect into that, we can change our lives, our world, and everyone else's, because it only takes a small one. It takes one person to create a ripple effect. It only takes a small, you know, group of committed people to change the world, and that's magic, plain and simple.
Right. Right on, sister. I love it. That's so awesome. And by the way, you may have seen they've actually had documentation that unicorns did exist.
And they still do.
Yeah. Right? So that's awesome. I love it. Me and my unicorn, I go riding my unicorn all the time. So
that's right.
Oh, that's so great. So there's something in here. I've obviously done a lot of, looked at all your blogs and your site, and oh my God, it's so fascinating. Obviously, we don't have enough time to talk about everything that you're creating and what you bring to people, how 3 minutes of peace on a daily basis will transform your life. I'm really fascinated about that. I give me some of that, girl.
Oh my goodness. Yes. So I have what's called the 7 days to intuitive intelligence and 7 sacred rituals that you can do that will actually help you to tune into your inner truth. And one of those rituals is what I call the 3 minutes of peace. And 3 minutes of peace, and the definition behind this, mindfulness, meditation, whatever you want to call it, I call it three minutes of peace, because I think people, when you say meditation, it scares some people. They don't really understand what that means, right?
Yeah,
they're like, oh, meditation, that's for that person over there or that person in the mashram or whatever. But when you can understand that meditation creates miracles, it brings forth infinite possibilities to our internal being, and miracles are the manifestation of our soul's destiny. So if we think about it, we are all miracle workers. You are power. You are a miracle. And when you begin to expect the extraordinary, it shifts your energy in this world. And so how do we create that? How do we do that? Well, the meditations and mindfulness is a way to this magic and these miracles. And this means maintaining a moment-to-moment awareness of our thoughts and feelings, bodily sensations, you know, the surrounding environment, and not getting frustrated or upset with ourselves when we think. So meditation isn't about thoughtlessness or not having thoughts or getting out there, but really about becoming so present in a moment and focused that you allow this to happen. And so the ritual that I talk to people about that really allows this process, which involves acceptance, meaning that we pay attention to our thoughts and feelings without judging them and without believing, for instance, that there is a right or wrong way to think or feel or give in any moment. So I teach my clients, and I work with people, and I tell them to just take this three minutes of peace. Set your alarm for 3 minutes. That's all you need. So many people think I got to sit for 40 minutes, 45 minutes,
right.
Whatever. But 3 minutes, and do this in however what works for you. It can be present moment, which means see what you see, feel what you feel, touch your skin, and just become completely present and aware of what's going on. Or you can lay in bed in the morning and do a 3-minute body scan, starting with your feet to your ankles, to your calves, just going up and noticing where you feel tension or where you feel things in your body or what you're doing. Or you can do a 3-minute visualization. So you can pick, like every day I have a different visualization that I do. One could be around what I want to create in my business. Another one's on, you know, a future thing that I want to do. I mean, there's so many different ways you can do that. But 3 minutes is enough to create the space and heal it and fear it, feel it and see it. Or you can go to, I call, you know, I have my inner sacred tree and my sacred wisdom. I'm a shaman, so I'm very connected to nature. So I go for 3 minutes, I go to my space, to my healing space, and I ask my guides for questions or answers or the things that I need to know today, and I'll do that. Or you can do journaling for 3 minutes. Anything, any of that stuff, that 3 moments of peace, that 3 minutes of peace, which allows your mind to break, after over a time, will really create a space in your life. You'll start to see things differently. You'll start to hear things differently. You can even do 3 minutes of mantra. You know, one of my favorites is to say Om Shanti, which is I am peace. You know, and just repeat that for 3 minutes straight. But any of that kind of stuff really makes this whole shift into your world change. And that's in you guess you can do more than that, but start with that and do 3 minutes, and then maybe 3 minutes later in the day and 3 minutes later in the day. And if anybody that says they don't have 9 minutes in their day, they need a lot more, they got a lot more things going on than they think, and they're going to need more than that. But, you know, it's just taking that time. And I'm telling you, that for me has been one of the things that has opened up my life more than anything is meditation, and it has completely shifted and changed the way that I do, and it's helped me create my business. It's one of the things that has helped me to have divine downloads and get information and do all that, and it's just so very powerful. So I think however you do that 3 minutes of peace, whatever that looks like for you, don't shoot yourself into it being a certain way, is really what it's all about.
Yeah, I love that. That's really great advice, because as a meditation teacher myself, it's like people are so, they just get so overwhelmed. First of all, they don't think they're doing it right, right? And then and then it's that time factor. So that is so realistic and so doable, right? To say 3 minutes, come on, dude, you got 3 minutes, right? Give me 3 minutes and do whatever you want to do. Just unplug, right? Breathe, right? It doesn't have to be anything crazy. That's so cool. So you mentioned earlier about Greg Braden, so I'm not sure if this is the answer, but what person or persons have been your inspiration, like who have inspired you the most on your path? I'm curious, now and then, like you had talked a little bit about when, I think what you said was in your 20s, when you're going through all the bullshit, all the stuff that we need to do, you know, the drugs and the drug dealing and all the, and the eating disorder and all of that. And then you had a wake-up call. I don't know if it was subtle and slow over time or if it was, you know, massive. But, what, you know, who was your role model at that time? And you know, was it somebody, like for me, it was Marianne Williamson, you know, like Return to Love. That book saved my freaking life. So, you know, so who
one,
was that?
Yeah, so there, well, for me, there was a couple. First off, the first inspiration and the first thing was, and the number one thing was my daughter. She really, if it wasn't for her, I would not be on this path today. If I was told I would never have kids, and I got pregnant with her, and I believe that she came into this world. So she is an old soul. We've known each other many lifetimes. And I believe that she decided to come into this world in this lifetime to make sure that she, like, you know, that she was, she came as my savior, really, because at that point in my life, if it hadn't been for her, I wouldn't have made it through. And then after that, as I started getting into healing and spirituality and things like that, Eckhart Tolle was a really important person in my life that I started reading his stuff. And even before that, like the book, The Celestine Prophecy, I don't know, you know, that was an old one, but good, right? That kind of first just opened me up to this whole other realm of healing and things like that. And then when I really started to make the transformation of true healing back in 2010, after I was homeless in 2009 and lost everything, and in 2010 I finally started to make a decision. I had a doctor, Dr. Betty, that she introduced me to. I was working with her. She was one of my training clients, and she introduced me to a school which is what started me on my path to really making the changes in my life that got me to where I'm at today. And so that was a real huge catalyst. I think there was like these pieces in time where, you know, I was just really open at that point to anything that would make a difference, you know, that would help me to heal, change. And it was like things were just dropped into my lap, people, experiences, all the things. I got to see that, you know, Deepak Chopra. I had the opportunity to mentor with Jack Canfield and go to, you know, CEO space. And I used all these really cool things that just started happening because I because I literally just dropped to my knees and asked the universe and said, I need help. Please show me something because I'm not, this isn't working anymore. And I was really at that point. And so it was a really huge, change for me. It really made a huge difference.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
Whew, and of course, the good ones, Marianne Williamson, of course she's been a huge piece in my life too. And there's so many others. I mean, I have a list of people that I follow and things that I've completely changed my life. So, maybe we should do a thing on that someday. Let's put together a list of everybody that I love, like the best books and the things like that. There's just so many.
Right. I know, right? It's crazy. I'm definitely a bookaholic. I say I should be an AA, Amazon, an author. Right? Wow, this is so fascinating, right? All of this. So I guess what, ultimately your message to the planet, right? So if you had to sum it up, your little elevator speech of inspiration, what would that be?
Ah, I love that. So my true mission in this world and what I'm all about is about bringing us back to a divine matriarchal society where we can raise social sustainable conscious awareness and spirituality through a holistic approach to healing the mind, soul, and body. And that's and one of the ways that I believe in doing that is through what I call intuitive intelligence, and which is really understanding that we all live in a completely interconnected world where, with the study of quantum physics and people starting to understand how truly connected that we are, that we can raise the vibration of this planet, that we can change, we can heal the world, we can raise conscious children, we can heal trauma, and we can create social awareness. And the way that we're going to do that is through intuitive intelligence and through connecting each other into this magic and into the miracles that we all have and sharing our gifts with the world. And, I really believe that we are on a conscious revolution to transform the world. And it takes us as soldiers and warriors to every day make that effort and that difference.
Wow. That's amazing. You're truly an earth angel. I'm so glad we were able to connect. If you can tell our listeners how they can work with you a little bit about what you're doing right now. Maybe I know you've got so many exciting things happening with your academy. Take some time and just talk about whatever is near and dear to your heart right now and how people can work with you.
Okay, great. Well, you can go to my website, melissabinkley.com. That's my full name, melissabinkley.com. And if you go there, I have a you can sign up for my 7 days of rituals, and every day you'll get a ritual that you can do to create more peace and inner truth in your life and learn how to share your story and your gifts. And even whether you want to do that, whether you're an entrepreneur and want to do that on a large scale or with your community, or you just want to learn how to be more open in your own life with your family, however that is, these rituals are absolutely incredible and a real way to check to connect into that. And then the other way is if you are a holistic entrepreneur or a woman with a mission or somebody that really, really wants to get their voice heard in the world, who's interested in learning how to speak all over the world and do transformational healings, I want you to email me at melissa@melissabinkley.com. So it's melissa@melissabinkley.com. And let me know what your mission is in this world. I love to connect with people that have a mission, and I want you to personally email me. And if you email me personally, I promise I will respond personally, and I will tell you about this amazing free webinar that I masterclass that I did that teaches you how to get out in the world and how to share your voice on the stage. And it's something that's near and dear to my heart and something that I've been doing. I've been traveling the country for 15 months speaking, and I'm going to my first international event in a couple of weeks. So I want to show other amazing people how to do the same thing. So email me personally. So either go to melissabinkley.com and check out my free gift, or email me at melissa@melissabinkley.com and tell me about your mission, and I'll share with you how to get on stages, and it'll just be a complimentary thing that I would love to share with you.
Oh, my God, that is so awesome. I'm so excited. First of all, I'm so excited that you and I met, and we know that there's no coincidence with that. And I'm excited to see about the things that you and I hopefully are going to co-create together in the future. And again, Melissa, thank you so much for being on the show, Inspired Rebel Radio, right? A show where we inspire you to step outside the box, embrace your fears, and live your life as if the gate has been left wide open. Melissa, are there any parting words that you'd like to share with our listeners at this time before we say goodbye?
The only thing I want to share is just tap into your intuition, listen to your intuitive intelligence, because the world is waiting for you to share your purpose.
You're awesome, girl.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We'll be in touch soon, and hopefully we'll have you on the show again sometime.
Awesome.
Have the best day ever. Make it a great one.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.